It's commentary because it's a fine example of what happens when you take someone who is a good engineer or an excellent or a genius engineer and they say make business decisions. Well,
that's like putting Kendrick at the head of Conga.
And Richard's downfall too is that he thinks he's good at everything.
Yep.
Oh yeah, so that is you.
Because Kevin is like obsessive twitchy tendencies whenever he's just doing nothing.
Yeah.
Because his leg will start popping in a second, or he's going to keep
goddamn
at fucking
ball. He's good at everything forever.
But nope, that's not what I'm saying, y'all. He's not good at it. This is one of his fatal flaws.
Yeah.
This is something that can be exploited to destroy Kevin, finally. Not that I'm looking.
Who here? This is Sid Sock, everybody.
Yeah, Sid Sock. I'm Kyle. We have been recording.
Yes. I'm Kyle.
I expect.
How many people here have watched...
Kevin's here.
Oh, I'm here.
Silicon Valley all the way through.
I have missed the last season.
I've only seen bits and pieces.
I've watched the first two seasons, I think.
So we have a pretty solid shotgun spread here.
Okay, I don't want to like ruin anything, so I won't talk about spoilers, but I will say that watching that show and working at a tech company is actually scary. It's like, let me see if I can equate it to, like, if you, maybe this will work. So, did you ever hear that, you remember that show Rescue 911?
Yes.
They used to just play through 911 calls and kind of slightly dramatically reenact them.
Yeah.
That was the show. It was pretty straightforward. I mean, I can't believe that no one thought of that before to make a bunch of money, because all they would do is play through the 911 calls.
Which are all recorded
somewhere today. And so, and that was the show, and they weren't even really showing much. They would have interviews with the people, but it was genius, because there was, no production at all.
Oh, yeah.
It was just an interview show. But, when you watch that show, as a human being in the world, you're like, oh, my God, there's so much terrible stuff that can happen to me, because... everything in the world is being feeded into this one show,
sure.
And it's a slight drop of paranoia.
Yeah.
You take your medicine, your paranoia medicine by watching Rescue 911.
I don't need to take
and
paranoia
you're good
medicine.
To go for the week.
I have been.
Working at a tech company, watching Silicon Valley is like that. Because Mike Judge manages to fit every possible thing that can go wrong with any kind of tech company at any stage into the entirety of the show.
Did Mike Judge do Silicon Valley?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't realize that. Okay.
And it's
that makes
terrifying
so much
because you start to learn about things that you never even understood before. And you're like, oh my God, is that something that can happen? This insane. Why would this be the way it is? Or why would a developer want to make something like this when it has this much of a problem? Or... you see all these corporate tactics of how investment firms buy out their investment firms and how they block sales and how they prevent people from doing stuff. And I'm it doesn't, it's one of those things where it's like Rescue 911. You're not sure if it's completely fake because you're these may just be ingenious plot points, but they also could be real things that are happening all the time that people do.
Is this something that he managed to fabricate because this was really clever and he thought about it?
Or did it happen
to
him?
Is this from experience?
Yeah. And so, I will say, be careful if you're like me and you get kind of unknowingly emotionally invested in shows you watch, because Silicon Valley put me in a weird spot for about a week, because I was like, oh my God, my job is not stable. This, everything's bad. We're going to explode or implode on ourselves. Something bad's going to happen.
I just, every time I think of Silicon Valley, the one scene that pops up in my head that I remember distinctly is suddenly it looks like they're getting hacked. And because there's just their product or their code is just being removed.
Oh yeah,
and they're
you've seen that
everyone's scrambling and they're slapping on computers and everyone's screaming. And one of the guys comes over and they're like, I can't remember who the other company is, but they're like, they're hacking us. I don't know how they're doing it, but they're deleting all of our stuff. And the dude looks over and there's a box sitting on a Mac that's open, and he lets it, and it's been sitting on the delete key.
It's
and
a big old bottle of tequila.
And then sit, hears from the other room, we got, it stopped, we don't know. And then he
sets it back down on the delete key.
Oh my God, they're back in, we don't know what's going.
That's such a Mike Judge thing.
That's a very Mike Judge thing.
That character, Russ Hanneman, is the guy who's lifting that tequila bottle, is a really funny, terrifying character throughout that whole show.
So, it is worth noting, that it is very dramatized. It's over the top. It's like the NCIS of...
But that's what I'm saying, is it is a show, but they managed to pull everything in.
That's what I'm saying, is it's uncomfortable because the parts that are dramatized and the parts that are real are probably not the ones you think they are.
Is a 51% attack real?
That's like a neural net thing, right?
Mm.
I forget that. So I watched it as it was coming out.
Okay.
And then I missed the last
I won't talk about that because
the details are
their product shifts... multiple times throughout the show, they're not just doing the thing they start with. It ends up being something that's different
every season. Okay, that's fine.
The like, and so what they end up doing is something that when I started thinking about their final product, though, I'm like, I wouldn't want that at all. That sounds like it could be really bad.
I don't remember what if it was the fourth season. I don't remember what it was.
It's like their.
That's not spoilers to know.
Okay, the product. So like they shift from being like a compression algorithm, like it has a compression algorithm, and then they start doing something in season two. I don't remember. And then season three, they have like a video chat app.
Yep, because they use the compression algorithm to do video chat. Yeah.
Season four, the Richard, the main guy, starts working on what he's calling like the new internet.
Right. Okay. Yes.
Where I've like
seen that one or start
he's got this thing and it's like on everybody's phones. It's basically like BitTorrent meets some other things what that I don't truly understand. Where like everybody's phone's doing a little
blockchain.
Bit of the computing power.
BitTorrent and blockchain.
Yeah. So it's kind of cool, but then like as they start to get into the problems with that, you're like, that sounds terrifying actually, because the 51% attack thing has to do with like it being, since it's not on server any one place, if your section or
if
like
you,
your
if you
user,
poison something and you're controlling 51% of the devices, then the way that content gets resolved you'll be able to dominate it essentially. So it was an exposure to a vulnerability, which I think. So a lot of like those high level concepts, the high level concept is real.
Yeah.
The nitty gritty details and the fake operating systems are where it starts to fall apart, or the level of danger, because they talked about this is loosely based on the concept of Bitcoin, which is a blockchain.
Yeah, they called it Pipercoin.
Well, they made their own.
Yeah.
Well, there's also 100 bitcoins now, right? Because there's Dogecoin, there's Litecoin, mm-hmm. there's Kanye
there's
coin, there's
thousands.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, you're right. Sorry, that's a little bit different than Bitcoin in terms. Pipercoin's a little bit different than Bitcoin.
But it's a similar concept, and so you have to understand the blockchain, and no one really does, especially anyone trying to sell it to you. I think it's stupid. I don't think it's nearly as monumental as everyone seems to think that it is. Bitcoin is remarkable, but I think there's a lot of stuff. I was like, well, use the blockchain to handle your web videos. There's a contract of toads. I think it's the latest.
The Switch was originally going to use blockchain or something like that, where like your Switch would be in a cradle and like it was going to collectively use like computing power from all
the
Switches.
So the thing about that to remember is the blockchain refers to public immutable ledgers, essentially. So you're building out a giant block of data that's shared across the internet.
Okay.
That's essentially what it is. And then anything in that ledger is decentrally stored and therefore fundamentally immutable. You can't take down a server or you can't fake something because everybody's got a piece of the blockchain.
Yeah, and like you're supposedly your data, the data on the blockchain or in the blockchain is more secure. And that's what they're saying, but I'm trying to
that's part of the trick. It's actually completely public.
Yeah, but 100% pieces.
Well, 100% of the data is 100% visible to 100% of the people 100% of the time. So it's not secure and being protected from other people, that it's secure in that if I attempt to falsify something, it'll become immediately evident because the other copies are be like, no, this one's the odd one out, you're wrong. And so that's the whole concept behind Bitcoin mining and creating these values in the blockchain and putting things into the blockchain itself. It is a chain of block memory. So blocks of memory in a chain.
Like a chain gang.
Yeah, except
that's the most
none of
coherent
that.
Explanation of this I've ever heard, and then I'm actually starting to kind of understand.
I've studied it a number of times. I'm not an expert, but I've had to keep trying to figure it out because I never put enough energy in to get good at it, just enough to understand the basic concept. So the principle behind Bitcoin is when you, the creation of the coins is something that's confusing and related to blockchain and math that is not directly pertinent to this. That's mostly built as an incentive for you to participate in the blockchain as a device. That's not the part that's interesting for me. That's for this conversation, relevant to the new internet thing. But the part that's pertinent is Bitcoins don't exist. There's not a thing to them. But when you get one, that wallet, which is a GUID, globally unique identifier. I think it's just a GUID, right?
Yeah.
Your ID has a transaction history associated with it in the blockchain. So the whole point is, every time, say for example, I want to give Joe one Bitcoin. What I do is I say, here's my wallet, here's Joe's wallet, move one Bitcoin from this wallet to that wallet. It goes into the ledger.
Mm-hmm.
The ledger is part of is what is converted into the blockchain, right? So
but that converted means, into or
like it, it, into? When you make the request, it hits the decentralized all the people participating in the network, and they incorporate it into okay, the blockchain. Okay. So they, when that becomes the next piece of the blockchain. I don't know how to handle collisions or how to handle race conditions, but I think there might be some consistency model. Whatever it is, you're in the blockchain. That means, boom, that transaction is recorded and public for anybody else consuming who has access to the blockchain, which is everybody because that's the whole point.
Mm-hmm.
And then if he wants to give you a Bitcoin, he puts another transaction in, right? But if for to know if he has a Bitcoin to give means we have to go all the way back to me to make sure that I gave him a Bitcoin, that I had a Bitcoin to give him.
So it's as only as like it's as you have to go all the way back to the beginning of the transaction
history. The history of the Bitcoin, essentially.
It's like from the very beginning every time.
Not necessarily the very beginning every time, but you do have to run through that, which is one of the reasons Bitcoin transactions take a long time. They're slower than a credit card process because you have to compute all of this stuff. That's part of what, if I remember correctly, that's part of what the mining is computing all of this stuff. So. That's where I get fuzzy on the details.
So what does this have to do with the internet, decentralized internet?
The concept of that is that if you have a decentralized internet, you have these clients running on multiple devices with the expectation that they're going to be participating in moving this data around.
Mm-hmm.
As far as the breaking that up, you could theoretically just take part of the blockchain and be responsible for that part. And if you have enough devices and you duplicate it like a torrent, then you'll have a full copy of the internet available to you by reaching out across a whole lot of devices, and then you have some impressive negotiating thing where
I think that's probably where they're compressing.
That's where some of the compression stuff comes in, but that's also where it being serverless gets tricky because you don't have orchestration to be like, oh, this bit's over there, that bit's over there. Like a torrent, it's a similar sort of thing. You broadcast out your request saying, who's got the pieces? And then they all come back like, I've got this piece, mm-hmm. and you can put it back together like that. So you can already theoretically map. You could ostensibly use a BitTorrent like protocol as a base layer for your TCP/IP or even like higher, and that would be possible. I think right now it would be very slow and there's no infrastructure, no one's there doing it. So they're essentially they're doing that kind of stuff.
Which all comes back to the idea that they have something that can make everything faster. That's like kind of why they had to set that up
yes, the first season. Because then they can, yeah. But so the trick is, the danger is if I have my file, or my transaction, let's say I gave Joe a Bitcoin, and I have it on my device, his device, your device, your device. We all agreed on that transaction. But if you wanted to introduce a different version of history where I didn't give him a Bitcoin, maybe he gave me a Bitcoin instead.
Oh, I made it to where you guys all gave
and me. And I made that, and then he made that, and then you had that. Even if he's got the truth still.
We have more truthy truth.
You have to have some system for negotiating potential issues. Because if your phone gets corrupted, or damaged, or willfully problematic, and we have three different versions or we have the one version of reality and you're the odd man out, then you have to have something that tolerance
for that. You can't just, yeah. So that goes, there's an episode there where they use the fridges to do stuff. Have you seen that one?
Yep.
So I didn't quite understand. So first and foremost, I want to get back to Silicon Valley as a whole. We're talking about all the like tech stuff. There's also a parallel story in every like episode or so on and so forth where there's just a shitload of humor that has to do with really great stuff. So every season has like an arc of humor that's kind of integrated into it as well. So don't think that the show's super serious because it's actually hilarious. It's a comedy.
It's very goofy.
The AI stuff that they get into and the machine learning stuff they get into is hilariously topical and amazing. And if you haven't saw that season, you should go watch it because it's funny.
I firmly recommend anybody who works in software to watch at least the first season. If you watch the first season and you're like, this is dumb, then you're just not going to be my judge. That's fine. But if you watch the first, I bet you'd be into it.
Especially and if you watch the first season,
is so hilarious.
If you watch the first season, the middle out compression thing, it's funny. And I love later on, that's how another dude figures it out too, because he's like doing it and he's like, oh shit. And then he writes it on the board.
That's the inspiration for the middle out compression, is exclusively jerk.
I watch it and I had a lot of trouble getting past the first and second season because Richard is such an asshole and he makes the worst decisions. Like, even an invalid monkey could make better decisions than Richard does. And like, it's so hard to watch because you're just watching him do like Steve Rochian things.
Well, it's not just Steve Rochian, it's like,
it's commentary.
It's commentary because it's a fine example of what happens when you take someone who is a good engineer or an excellent or a genius engineer and they say make business decisions. Well,
that's like putting Kendrick at the head of Conga.
And Richard's downfall too is that he thinks he's good at everything.
Yep.
Oh yeah, so that is you. No, whenever you start a tech company,
I don't think I'm good.
You like become, if it's as a startup, you are the CEO. If you're the lead engineer, you're the CEO, CFO, COO. Like unless you've assigned those jobs out, you're basically everything.
Which you can't
afford to. Yeah. And so it's funny to watch that transition when it happens in the show too, because they get invested in, obviously, because the show goes on for 4 seasons and it couldn't be a startup for 4 seasons. And well, it would be very stressful to watch.
Kind of.
And so, like, then he gets really butthurt and he can't be CEO or something like that. I don't really remember. But it's funny to watch and you're like, stop, stop. And then in the later seasons, they start addressing it, like how bad he is at just completely sabotaging himself. But so back to the fridge thing. That really confused me a lot. So there was this whole arc where something happens with, like, a smart fridge. And one of the coders does some
interactions. This is like right before they actually had like smart fridges were a thing. Like smart fridges were just coming out when they were making this, so it was very topical. Now smart fridges are a thing, I guess.
Yeah, and so like he like basically brute forces his way into this smart fridge and puts like a prank thing on it, and that somehow ends up doing something later that saves them. And I didn't quite understand the firmware update aspect there. So like you're like the fridge was checking to see where the most recent firmware was, and because there was a more recent version on another thing, it updated everybody's. Is that real?
I forget.
That seems dangerous, I guess, is what I
forget.
I mean,
the exact thing they did for that. I think there was something where they wrote the software for the fridges as a contract. Didn't they meet with the fridge people? And they
afterwards.
Agreed? I thought it was before.
No, because they, like, basically they, like, are about to get sued for it. And then they're like, well, we can make it better. And then
That's right. So, if I remember correctly, there was something about... it was peer-to-peer. It was like BitTorrent again. Like
kind of, yeah.
The fridges would share their version of the firmware to other fridges.
Yeah, and that's the funny part is because the fridge companies are like, we never wanted to get into software anyway. So they had like this shitty software team that was just doing the bare minimum to make the fridge work. And it caused all of these like security issues that then ended up doing a bunch of stuff that was really fun for the episodes and the shows. And I was like, that makes a lot of sense because if you look outside of tech companies and people who are like forced to be making smart technology and stuff that normally wouldn't have to be smart, like a smart oven, you're like, how that could go horribly wrong? Like, imagine like someone's oven getting like hacked into somehow, and then they just start a fire in someone's house. Like,
oh, dude, when we talked about the Sabbath mode on certain ovens. Have I talked about that before?
No. Sabbath?
Yes. Oh. There is a specific setting, and I forget which. There's a couple of particular brands. You can buy an oven that has a Sabbath mode. Because in a lot of Jewish and Judeo-Christian religions, the Sabbath is not, you are not allowed to do anything.
According to the Torah, on the Sabbath, you're not supposed to ignite or put out any flames. And a lot of them interpret this to mean any electricity as well.
Okay.
So it's you can't turn anything on or turn anything off.
Okay. So what they'll do is they have like, this, like,
you switch, flick, like, what's the line?
There are many variations. Okay. Yeah,
carry on. I want to hear this because I want to hear where they're drawing the line.
What would happen is that they, what the Sabbath mode does, to first explain, is basically, like, you set your timing, and it has kind of like a little calendar function. It's like basically every 6 days it works, and then on the seventh day it shuts down. You can't touch it, you can't modify in it. Anything that it's all, and this is the thing, is like it doesn't just turn it off. Anything that it's set to do will continue, and you cannot do anything about it. Well,
you
can't
interact with it. Yeah.
So what they did, so the loophole, what this is used for is that on the night before, if you've got something you've got to cook for like a day, right? Like, you got to put, like, a turkey in or something, right? They would start the settings on it the night before, put it in, turn it on, and then the Sabbath mode initiates, and you can't touch it.
And it's because it's as of sundown on the day before the Sabbath.
Yeah, so it's like you didn't ignite any flames, you didn't do anything.
I mean, you can't leave an oven on for that long without repercussions.
No, it burns houses down. And you can't turn it off.
It should have an auto shut off.
So
you'd think... So it's like,
okay,
those Kendrick, weird little
what are you going to... You sound like you really want to say something.
No, so the whole Sabbath thing,
It's such a fucking hack.
It's really funny because
I want to point out that Kevin just threw up devil horns and mentioned.
I thought you were talking about like a super really hot mode because it's like Black Sabbath mode and it like goes to 700 and you can cook pizzas in it.
Well, they do it when you turn on like the auto clean.
Yeah, it just burns everything.
I thought maybe that was a new auto clean feature. Okay,
but you can't run it for more than 20 minutes because it burns your house down. So. The concept behind the Sabbath, the original concept behind the Sabbath is to early cultures of the time period when the Torah was written, people worked all the damn time, didn't take any time off. So the whole point was to create a day of rest, reflection, and to be with God, right? That's like the whole concept is to take this moment to observe your religion. And that was precisely probably to sell people to get into it, right? Because then you're not working. The problem is, back in the day, not igniting any flames meant not doing any work. Right, it's like, well, I'm not doing anything. I'm not working. I'm not picking up any tools. I'm not. And you're not. There's versions. It literally has sections in there where you're not supposed to tie any ties, or untie any knots, anything that could be work.
Like stuff and that if you in even, the time was related what, to like fishing or cooking.
The Torah. Yeah. Some of those sections, it is pedantic in certain ways. You can start to see where certain stereotypes come from, but when you're reading it, like,
we should have an episode.
Yeah. Well. Yeah. Great. That's one of the reasons that there's certain people who are extremely hardcore into this have special garments they wear that you don't have to fasten on those days because then you're not doing any work at all.
Yeah.
The problem is you do still want to eat. You could choose to fast that day, and I believe there are groups that do that. It's also worth noting that we call it, you know, the Jewish traditions are actually more like 30, I think, at least, I know of five main branches of Jewish traditions, including one that's atheist, which gets sort of interesting.
Interesting and confusing.
But then there's the Hasidics, there's the Orthodox, there's the like the different levels of them, and then they all have different interpretations because one of the big traditions of Jewish faith is debate, not necessarily debate, arguing, but thoughtful conversation. The rabbi doesn't just tell you what's going on. You talk. And you argue, and you come up with these things, and you do all this stuff, and then you end up with like an interpretation that has some clout because this rabbi said so, and the other rabbi agreed with him, and then they kind of form into clusters. It's a little less top-down hierarchical than some of the religions. So there's a lot of these things that have been beaten to death, and like they've figured out, no, if you spark static electricity against a doorknob, that doesn't do it because Herzl and I went into that till the wee hours of the morning one time, so we decided that, no, that doesn't count as igniting a spark, so you didn't, blah, 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 blah. And there's all these other rules. There's a whole system about turning your oven on the night before, cooking something, you know, getting it hot, putting something in there, and then turning it off so that it bakes, and it continues to bake into the morning, and then you can take it out, and you can eat it. There's a whole bean dish that's built around this thing. You make a giant thing of beans the night before, and you just eat that cold for the rest of the day. So there's all of these weird traditions. Most fascinating part for me is that a lot of modern people in this faith who believe in this for various reasons to do that get around it with these hilarious ways of doing that. Like
these little loopholes.
Well, like you can't drive a car because that ignites the flame and you're operating a tool. So there's all this stuff. But you can hire a genteel to do it for you. So they get around just fine by hiring a guy.
And the concept there is you're fine with the person outside the Jewish religion sitting and being terrible because they're not beholden to your rules.
Right. And so like this is the most weirdly symbiotic kind of relationship. They're like, be a mensch, drive me out of the thing. It's like, okay. But I think there's like you're not supposed to touch money either, so like you have to, I'll pay you tomorrow.
I heard about that. Because like auto payments and phone stuff is like becoming a real big thing because you're not supposed to touch money, so there's like a way to pay where like you can just hold your phone and someone scans it for you.
You didn't touch money
and you weren't actively engaging in transactions. It's like
religious rules lawyering.
And that's the funniest. That's exactly what I was gonna say. All this is like rules mongering and rules lawyering, and it's like it's great to see stuff come out of it, but doesn't it just defeat the purpose in general? Like, isn't it one of those things where you should probably like take a look and be like, maybe this was not meant for the people that are us nowadays, and we should take a critical look at our religion,
leave the faith, or splinter.
Yeah, or
there are people who don't observe the Sabbath.
Yeah, okay.
And that's also about the big joke in the Big Lebowski.
I must have missed this, but what was the purpose originally of needing to not work a day?
I don't know exactly. That's actually where I'm not sure. I have a feeling that it came from, because they're talking about, 3,000, 4,000 years ago? Like,
I guess it's not clear. But
it might have been coming out of a time period of a lot of, not necessarily slavery, because that was a little later, but
kind of what I was thinking, like,
but forced labor,
rebelling
like,
by not working a day, and it's religious, so we can get away with it.
It might also, a lot of those things come about as a marketing. Like, come join our religion. You don't have to work one day. And that sounds messed up, but you got to grow your religion. That's one of the ways that you can see that. Like,
yeah.
Well, I don't know if that's true, but I'm saying it.
No, yeah, I mean
it's not to harsh on anybody.
No, just let us know, and we'll talk about it again. But
some of the Christian sects that I know, and I'll just say this, and just like there's some of the Christian sects I know about that follow that are exclusively doing it from like the Genesis chapter of like on the seventh day God rested, and it's like so you should take that.
Right. I mean,
day
So does that mean they can't like handle money and stuff, or do they just choose what they
don't
want
to do? See that one that kind of gets into its own weird little
sect. The New Testament. Is the patch. It revises the release notes from the Old Testament. So that's true. This is actually a thing. I mean, we studied it not from growing up in a religion, but from a comparative religion class. They talked about that's really what the Christian, like, one of the reasons it took off was all these people who had to follow all these onerous rules. The Christians were like, no, that was the old way. We have made amends with that. Jesus came along and changed the rules. And it's like, look, things are different now. We don't have to observe these ways. We observe these ways now.
When do you think Jesus could have came? Do you think there could be another like coming to revise rules again ever?
There was. And that's called Islam.
Okay, and like nowadays though, like, do you think that could ever happen again? Wait, we only have 45 seconds. We're done. We'll have to talk about that next time.
To be completely honest, yes, and it has happened. And then you've got the Shakers and the Quakers, and you've got
the
Mormons.
Name takers.
The Mormons.
The Undertakers.
It has happened since then.
Okay.
And it could happen again, but the problem is these religions are not living anymore. They're not like Christianity now is as old as Judaism was when Christianity started. Right.
Yeah.
So like it's they become less active parts of our lives and more a backdrop against which we live. So you don't see people. The religion is less important now than it was at zero, year zero, or 2000 BC.
In straight terms of the necessity of having a system.
The power of religion in that time period was bringing people together to work together to create communities and follow rules. Like one of the reasons they don't eat shellfish and pork is because there was a lot of bad pork and bad shellfish out there. That's part of it. So this is unclean.
Maybe not because of this next time because there's a lot of interesting stuff here. But like
comparative religions,
the thing I really always wonder is like how if you ask somebody like. What is the part they believe in most about the religion? And some people say, I believe that God works through us. I believe that the teachings of Jesus are the way to live. Or, like, I've heard people say, I directly believe everything that's out of the Bible. And it's like you have to kind of consider
even the stuff that contradicts the other stuff.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. But thanks for listening. We appreciate it. Yeah. We'll probably delve into this more later.
Like, comment, and subscribe, and tell us, feel free to hurl insults at us. I'm pretty sure Joe's an anti-Semite.
There's
like 100%
chance. No! That's not true.
It's not true. You heard it here first. It's not true.
Fine.
That's true.